Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. Want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me today, my fabulous multiple co-hosts, you guys, Rams fans, Athletic subscribers, Athletic supporters, I don't know, that seems weird. Guys, it is so great to be on here with you today. This is fun, right? We're going to do more of these through the season because I feel like this might be a year where you will want your voices heard, right? Whether it is venting or questions or more venting or watching a group of really, I think, extremely just motivated young people get better together. There's going to be some bumps, but I know you guys will have thoughts and feelings. Feel your feelings. We love that here. And I just can't wait to hear from you guys all year. So thank you for joining me today for this really fun episode of 11 Personnel Live. And I'm getting ready. I'm starting to pack, hiding my suitcase from my dog because he tries to sit in it whenever he sees it to prevent me from leaving. And I'm starting to pack for Seattle. And that's going to be really fun. That's a crazy opener. And, you know, competitive games last year, by the way, even with a completely decimated Rams roster. So I think this is going to be fun. The vibes around the facilities have been really good this week. And I know everyone's excited to get everything going, and that probably has something to do with it. But I keep telling you guys, like, this is not a team that thinks they're going to be an easy out in any of these games. Now, whether that is true or not remains to be seen. So caveat, let's be logical with that on the outside. But it's a group of mostly young people, and they all like each other, it seems like. I mean, the vibes have been really great. This was our first week back in the locker room as well. And there's just a ton of energy in there. There's debates over college football and debates over movies and TVs and TV and you know, just fun conversations. And there's like some sort of, I have to have a closer inspection of this. There's some sort of like 1980s, like stand-up video game in the corner. I think it's like NFL related. I'm going to have to go check that out. And the mini golf course in there, you know, it's a pretty small locker room because the Rams are still in their temporary facilities, but these guys are genuinely hanging out together. It's been fun to watch. It was especially fun to watch Thursday Night Football, the first half with all of them in the locker room on Thursday. There was a lot of really earnest and wholesome, you know, go Jared and go Jared Goff moments from everybody, you know, including Matthew Stafford. And there was a lot of really earnest moments over people who were genuinely happy to be watching football again. Lots of breakdowns and diagnoses of different plays and what the Chiefs were doing and what the Lions were doing. And it just was really fun. I think I share the sentiment with everybody that I'm really happy that football is back. Although in our world, especially if you're a fan or if you're a journalist, never really goes away, which is great. That's what we sign up for, right? So yeah, guys, the news of the week, obviously, let's just rip through that real quick. And when I say rip, I mean rip because it might be painful for some of you to hear if you haven't been keeping up with it. You know, Sean McVay said that there's a definite possibility that Cooper Kupp goes on injured reserve this week, and Stetson Bennett, and also Hunter Long, the tight end who was acquired via that Jalen Ramsey trade. So let's start with the latter. Obviously, super disappointing. Hunter Long was out the entirety of training camp. You know, I heard really good things from him or about him from Tyler Higbee and from the coaching staff, and he just can't get on the field. And that's a problem. I don't want to sugarcoat it. I think that's a pretty significant issue, but I also don't think that he's a player that they're going to just give up on because of some injury issues. Sometimes, you know, once you just get a year under the same training staff, sometimes those can be ironed out. And I can imagine that they're kind of trying to just, just go as precautious as possible with Hunter, especially because they actually have depth at tight end now between Tyler Higbee and Bryson Hopkins and Davis Allen. I know was a preseason favorite for many of you guys, and for a good reason too, because that dude can play some ball. And then, you know, Stetson Bennett has been dealing with the arm soreness for a while. He played most of the preseason, and so that doesn't surprise me a ton. But now they're going to have to make a decision whether Brett Rypien is going to be their number two if Bennett does go on IR, and they have to make that decision, or they got to decide whether they're going to sign a veteran. And obviously, you know, this is a week. Well, I don't say obviously because I think it's kind of a fun fact, actually. You know, this week, you have to get through week one. If you have certain veterans on the roster before week one, then their salaries become fully guaranteed for the entire season. And a team that's really cash tight and cap tight, like the Rams, they're, you know, you're not necessarily going to do that type of maneuvering, which explains why Brett Maher, the kicker, or Maher, the kicker, and Rypien are both, you know, on the practice squad, because obviously this was a known issue with Stetson. So you're probably going to see them as call-ups. I could be wrong about that, but it makes sense to me that you're going to see them as practice squad call-ups until after week one, the official calendar cycle of week one. So through Monday night, Tuesday at 1 PM is usually that waiver time. You're going to see probably, you know, the call-ups or not. You might, across the league, you'll see some veteran cuts probably. I'm not sure if you'll see that with the Rams. You might. There's a couple of people who could qualify and then could get brought back after that in order to factor into their roster for the rest of the season. But a significant amount is not guaranteed in terms of the salary after that, which obviously for a team that has such cap limitations that the Rams have, you're looking at, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. All of that counts, whereas the Rams in previous years were sort of working with tens of millions. Right now, they're sort of counting every thousand on their spreadsheet, which is a really interesting change. And then obviously the significant news is Cooper Kupp, right? I mean, I think everyone's bummed about this, whether you're a fan, a journalist. Just if you like football, you probably like watching Cooper Kupp play football, because he's just a fun player. And so I think you could look at it as a glass half empty situation, which, you know, if you're a fantasy football player, that's what you're probably looking at this as. And also, if you're a Rams fan that wants this offense to kick the doors down in the first couple games, you're probably upset as well, which is totally fair. But at the same time, the converse of this is he missed such a significant portion of training camp that it's not like they're pivoting in an emergency situation and redoing this offense on the fly without him. The second he has a soft tissue issue, you're sort of going through plan B, plan C, and figuring out what that looks like with all the other receivers. And that happened pretty early into training camp. So they have that going for them, I guess. Right. But you know, Van Jefferson steps up, you know, he plays the X. And, you know, as I've explained before at The Athletic, a piece wrote in training camp, when Cooper Kupp is healthy, he plays the F position, which is a multifunctional in like 1990s and 80s offenses. That was the fullback. It does not mean that that's the fullback in this offense. It just means that he can rotate along the line of scrimmage in any of the receiving positions. It means that he's going to be doing a lot of like tight end-ish concepts. Sort of those 11 and a half personnel things that we like to joke about. He's a key factor in the blocking game. He's got a lot of option routes. So when the F is in the Rams offense, the F is the X. When the F is not in the Rams offense, the X is the X. And then you have a little bit more of a traditional style of, you know, XYZ receivers, maybe a little fullback sprinkled in there because we love to have fun. So that's what we're looking at here. So Van Jefferson can play the X, DeMarcus Robinson can play the X, Tutu Atwell can play the X. Puka Nacua is a Y, maybe eventually an F maybe, and a Z, and kind of does the Robert Woods stuff, which is really positive for the Rams. And Tutu Atwell plays all the receiving positions now as well. So there's a plan. I imagine this could be a significant Tyler Higbee game as well. He had an outstanding training camp. As I wrote in a piece this week, he scored more touchdowns in the red zone than any player in training camp in the last 2 years. And so, and he was healthy. And so that was significant. So, you know, I'm not trying to spin this for the positive. There's some concern, obviously, with Cooper, but I also didn't get the sense, you know, nobody has really talked about shutting him down for the year. Like, I get the sense that shutting him, putting him on the IR would even be a little overly precautious, right? I mean, he's walking around out there. He's participating in drills as like the emergency quarterback, throwing it to teammates. It's not like he's lying immobile on a training table somewhere. But soft tissue injuries are so fickle, and hamstrings are just insane to deal with. So if you have the opportunity to take extra caution, you take it. Seeing the specialist in Minnesota was interesting because it was a sign that, yes, this was not your typical hamstring schedule. That's what Sean McVay was alluding to. Not a typical hamstring schedule. So that was interesting to me and eyebrow raising a little bit, because seeing a specialist in Minnesota would indicate at least trying to rule different things out, such as a nerve issue, such as a bone issue, any sort of those types of things. Because if it's a strain, you know it's a strain. You have an MRI and you see a tear in the muscle. And if you're going to see an outside specialist with Sean McVay indicating that there was some concern that it could be something else and there was a gray area, to me, that just means they're narrowing down everything it's not and figuring out what the plan is going to be. So this is definitely something that bears monitoring, but I did not get the sense that this is like the sky is falling situation with Cooper. It's frustrating, of course, and we'll just have to see. Sean McVay says day to day. I say it's week to week. We're just going to have to see. But I don't get the impression that this is like you'll never see Cooper Kupp on the field this season. A lot, of course, has to go right in terms of the rehab and the recovery. But as of now, my sense is not, you know, a worst case sort of dire straits scenario with this. So that's kind of the biggest news of the week. I know you guys have a lot of questions and I see people in the queue. I'm also going to get back to the chat here in a minute. You guys are leaving some awesome comments. Alexis E or Alexis F, I see you. Where's the pause? How am I doing? How are you doing, guys? Hope you're doing well. I'm fired up, man. All right, I'm going to start getting the queue going here. All right, so we're going to have Kenneth V. Kenneth V, I know you were first in line here, so I hope you're ready to go.
All right, yeah. So I'm assuming with the IR, it would be after the season starts. Now, would that be Thursday or would that be Sunday? As far as, you know, because if you do it before the season, then it's the whole year out.
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, this is a great question because it is a technicality point. So he would miss the whole year if he were put on IR before the cutdowns. So a player who's put on injured reserve prior to the 53-man roster deadline, they have to miss the entire year. But if a player is potentially going to be designated for return, then they are on the initial 53-man and then designated for IR. Something that's really interesting about this that tells me it's not, they don't think it's going to be like the worst case scenario is, you know, that week heading into right after the 53-man, you know, that was when he missed, right after the 53-man was established, that was when he missed practice. And after that, they put O'Shawn Mathis, who is dealing with a knee issue, they put him on injured reserve after cutdowns, which means he made the 53. So if they were worried about this being something that was a season-long thing, then an issue that was clearly had popped up, then we maybe would have seen something different in terms of the designated timeline. Like if they knew really for sure what this was, you probably would have seen him go on IR when O'Shawn went on IR. But because they're still seeking clarity and because I don't get the sense that this is like, again, a season-long thing, whenever he goes on IR, which I think if it happens, it would happen tomorrow, that means that he has to miss a minimum of 4 games and before he can kind of be reactivated back in that 21-day window. He has to be back on the active roster sometime within that 21-day window. If he is not, then at that point, the discussion is missing the season. So, like I said, it's a great question. It's a technicality, but because any player who makes the initial 53 man, and then is designated for injured reserve, they can also be designated to return after missing, a minimum of 4 games. Great question. Okay. Chandler R. Okay, Chandler, you got us?
Jordan. Awesome. Well, I know you're going to hear this all day, Jordan, but I just want to say, thank you for all you do. I can speak for all of us when I say you're so kick-ass. We love every one of your stories, every post you tweet out, everything, especially when it's about Tucker. We all love you. Anyway,
Thank you. I'll get to my question. That is so nice. Oh, my gosh. I'm blushing and sipping my coffee, so this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My question is about the O-line room and specifically the right guard spot. I know we're all going to be talking about that. To me and a lot of people, it seemed like Ankrum was kind of holding it down pretty well in training camp. And I mean, not saying that we see everything and not saying that you see everything, but what do you really think, besides the reason that they're paying Noteboom a hefty amount of money to play, why do you think he's their guy? Do you think it's strictly because he is a little bit better than Ankrum? Do you think it's the, I guess, experience that he's had already with this line and with this team? Just basically, you know, why did they wait so long to even announce it?
Yeah. Thank you so much for the question. That's a great question. And what we love to say on 11 personnel, as you guys know, is multiple things are true, right? And in this case, that is certainly the situation that's unfolding here, because it was sort of a sequence of events that caused other events, and then that caused other events, right? And so just to go back over the timeline, so Joe Noteboom came into camp, by the way, off the Achilles tear last year, which the things that Neil Elatrash is doing with that bracing surgery that he did on Cam Akers and now on Joe Noteboom are, it's like pretty extraordinary. That's an aside. It's just like I geek out over that stuff. But so Joe Noteboom came back, and it was a known fact that he was going to compete with Alaric Jackson at, who I'm going to call AJ here, at left tackle, right? And that was what the Rams paid him for, 3 years, $40 million. They restructured him this spring, obviously, but that contract was significant, and he was just sort of waiting in the wings, you know, behind Andrew Whitworth to take over that left tackle spot full time. That's why they drafted him. That is what he was supposed to do. But it started to become a little bit more apparent as training camp continued that he was not going to win that job. And so if you think that he's still one of your best linemen, which Sean McVay has said repeatedly, and also I have heard behind the scenes that that is what he thinks, then you're going to find out if there's a spot that works really well for them that is an improvement, or that you think, again, hashtag not my plan, but that you think is an improvement over another player who is there. And I think, like, at the same time, like, I think like a lot of you, I feel for Tremaine, because he also is coming back from a significant injury, that ankle injury, that fracture that he had. And he worked his butt off in training camp, and I thought he played really well. I think when you look at Tremaine Ankrum, you're also looking at the potential that he can be a swing depth player at guard. And he's also played a little right tackle for them as well. So when you're looking at getting the quote unquote best five, I think you at least want to try Joe Noteboom at a specific position where you think not only his experience level, but the way that he can sort of apply all of his knowledge to the position. I think you're sort of looking to see if that can work. And then that leads to, I think that's why Sean McVay was irritated, was not at the player, because he couldn't help the fact that he had the soft tissue upper body injury. Nobody can help that. But the fact that, you know, you have pivoted your plan in training camp, again, as they've pivoted these linemen a few times at this point, your plan has changed because you have a clear, stronger option emerging at left tackle, right? And then you now are thinking, okay, we also have to continue along the same lines of sort of bulking up the interior as they've done on the outside as well. And you want experience in there, and you're going to be doing a lot of different types of things in your run game. And so having an experienced player probably is where you would lean if you're a head coach. And then I think the irritation came from when all of a sudden you're ready to do that and get this player significant actual competitive reps and joint practices, he suffers the upper body soft tissue injury, right? And so you can't really see what you even have. And then now they've sort of crunched all of that into the last 2 weeks of practice before the season begins. I will also say, though, the chatter that I had heard, and I was writing about this, The Athletic, was that was, he thought, you know, way even before, you know, even before Joe was hurt, like before, as they were prepping to get into those joint practices, that he legitimately thought that Joe was going to be, you know, one of their best five, and specifically would be their best option at the right guard job. I don't think that that's an indictment of Tremaine's skill set necessarily. I think that there's, like we've mentioned and like you mentioned in your question, I think there's a lot of factors at play. And I also think that, you know, I'm kind of the mind where I'm not going to necessarily just rule someone out from succeeding somewhere that I haven't seen. I did not get to see Joe Noteboom play any right guard other than a few times at training camp in rotation with Tremaine Ankrum. That's a concern to me, and in part because it shows the timeline of how late they made the switch, because, you know, there's a certain point after cutdowns where media can't watch the whole practice anymore. So that's why they're sort of capitalizing over this lack of clarity, it seemed, through the week, because why not just say Joe Noteboom is starting at right guard, as it seemed like the plan was going? Well, you don't necessarily have to say it. If media can't watch your entire practice to see for themselves, you can sort of keep certain things under wrap, which I don't necessarily get the point of that. But, you know, I'm also not in those rooms and game planning and doing the little dance of gamesmanship that all these coaches do week over week. So I'm not going to rule out the potential that Joe Noteboom could be a very, very good right guard. I talked to him, you know, early last week, and he was extremely fired up, extremely ready to prove himself. I think the biggest question with Joe is always going to be durability. And it gets us into larger questions, as we've talked about a lot. I asked Les Snead about this last week, Sean McVay about this today. The lessons you have to learn about who you extend, understanding you have a known injury history, the lessons you have to learn about who you draft and why, and are you being pushed that way as a need? Are you playing someone out of position? Are they being set up for success in your system? And I think you can argue in both cases of Joe Noteboom, potentially of Brian Allen, and certainly of Logan Bruss, that in some ways, I don't think that they were ever being set up for success, whether it was switching positions over and over again, or, you know, extended to ultimately compete at a position that you lost, even understanding the injury history. You know, the organization has a very detailed understanding of the injury history. And so I just think that's all of this is a really big lesson for the Rams to learn along their offensive line. And I think that's going to be important to monitor and track moving forward, especially as they sort of shift their philosophy and their identity up there. You guys are not surprised at all that I just answered that in a very rambling way, but hopefully that was helpful. Chandler, thank you for your nice comments as well. Patrick T, I'm going to get you up here on stage. Okay, Patrick, you're on stage.
Hey, Jordan.
Hi.
Hi, Jordan. Hey, I love The Athletic. Love your articles. Love the 11 personnel. In fact, I'd like to see it on YouTube one of these days.
Oh, thank you.
Decide to broadcast on YouTube.
You guys don't want to see me. I promise you, you do not want to see me on a Tuesday after a road trip on your screen. I promise you that.
So. Oh, I think the banter between you and Rich would be great.
Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate
that. Okay, but I've got a boring question about the kicker and roster. So I assume that they don't have Maurer on the 53 because they're not sure how he's going to work out. So is it going to be a matter of week by week going from back practice squad to roster, then getting released, going back to practice squad until they decide whether he's the guy or not. How is that all going to work? And how has he looked in practice so far?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Not a boring question. You guys know how dearly I love to always be talking about kickers / special teams. And so I think it's a great question. No, I have not seen him kick because he's doing it. He's kicking when media is not viewing practice. So yet another delightful, fun twist of this time of year. However, I've talked to him. He's a really, really nice dude. You hope the best for him. He wants a fresh start. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, obviously different personalities, but kind of reminded me a little bit of Matt Gay when Matt Gay kind of went through a lot of crap in Tampa and then came to the Rams. And then it was sort of like, okay, this is good. He felt good. Kind of the yips left a little bit because of the location change. I think the Rams are also hoping for that. We'll just have to see. But in terms of the roster question, so it's twofold, right? So the first thing is they didn't want him on the 53 man, because otherwise his entire salary for the year, regardless of its size, would probably be a vet minimum deal, but it would have to be guaranteed for the full season. If he's on the 53 man on Sunday. And so obviously if you don't know whether this guy's going to work out for you or not, you don't want to have to be in the spot where you formally have to guarantee his entire salary. So keeping him on the practice squad as a potential call up. I mean, you're also banking on like another team, like not pulling like the most deeply chaotic and mean thing possible, which would be signing him away from you, like, so you don't have a kicker, which I just don't think teams are, I mean, we heard some crazy stuff from Sean Payton this summer, but I don't think that teams and coaches are that far into publicly wanting to hurt each other that bad. There's some gamesmanship involved. But anyway, so that's part of it, the first part. And then the second part is you just don't know if he's going to work out. So you can call him up 3 times from the practice squad and he won't count on your 53. And you can, over those 3 games, you can decide whether or not he's going to be your kicker, and then combine that with practice. That's the same amount of games that took them to decide that Tanner Brown was not their kicker. So I think that that's significant. I think that that's a solid sample size to know. And the call-up rules really make this, I think, a low-cost, low-risk opportunity in order to figure out whether Brett is going to be the guy. You obviously don't want to have gone through the entirety of training camp with at first the spring with 2 rookie kickers, the training camp with 1 rookie kicker, and then you ultimately cut that rookie kicker. But because this was it's ultimately such a low cost move for them. The whole thing is, like I said, they're pinching like tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point, and not so much thinking in millions anymore, right now anyway. And so this is significant. Structurally, that's just kind of why they operated the way they did. And much like you guys, I am looking forward to seeing this guy kick, because who knows? Roger M., you're next with your question.
Hi, Jordan. First off, like everybody's been doing, thank you so much for everything you do. I do wish the thing you'd be reporting would be a little bit more like, you know, the previous 2 seasons where it was a lot more upbeat, because, you know, I'm starting to stress already. But I appreciate all that because I want to know all the news. My question is about Trey Tomlinson. Do you expect him to get any play time, or where do you see him falling in? I mean, I felt like he had a great preseason. I don't know if you recall, I actually asked you about him last time that you had one of these call-ins. I asked you who had that dog in him, and you told me you saw that in him. So I'm already a fan of his, but I'm wondering if you expect him to get any actual playing time, or do you think it'll be a while for that?
Awesome question, Roger. And yes, I do remember you. I remember your question at that time, and I'm so glad that you guys were able to see in the preseason what I could see during training camp, which is that Trey Tomlinson, I think, is going to be a outstanding football player for the Rams, and definitely has the personality to be sort of that like larger than life, you know, celebrity kind of presence that I do know that we in the LA market just love to cover, love to highlight, and that fans gravitate toward. Obviously he's very young, right? So that's a multi-year thing. It's not necessarily a day-to-day thing. And I think Kobe Durant also, by the way, is going to be one of those players too. You see him doing a lot with the media team, and I think he's going to be someone who you're going to hear a lot more from this year as well. But Trey Tomlinson, you know, he just has so much potential, and particularly some of the things they're trying to do, you know, break on the ball faster, just have that quick twitch, like super aggressive ball skills. Those are the types of things that they need more of, even when they're playing, as we know, guys, ad nauseum. I know it's annoying for a lot of you to keep hearing me say this, but even when they're playing in that match zone, that's supposed to be a match zone and not a prevent zone. I think everybody on the planet is tired of seeing that prevent zone and needs this team to get back to a match zone or a man match, which I wrote about at The Athletic, and you can read about them wanting to do that and doing that in training camp. And so Trey is perfect for this, right? He's perfect for this because he's so quick and he understands space and he can make plays on the ball. And I think what will really start to help him gain an edge in terms of vying for playing time is if teams start to try to use a quick game against the Rams. If their pass rush starts actually developing and working a little bit, that's a lot of times when you'll see teams go to the quick game. That could get Trey Tomlinson on the field a little bit more, because I think, you know, I don't know who's starting. I would imagine that it's going to be Akello on one side, DK on the other side, Kobe at the star, and then Russ Yeast and Jordan Fuller at safety, and then Quentin Lake and John Johnson can come in. Obviously either for sub packages, and Quentin Lake can play the dime linebacker as well. There's going to be a lot of rotation, but that doesn't mean that Trey Tomlinson won't ultimately ascend to that role. I mean, I, like I said, I just think he has such an outstanding potential, growth potential. And I would not be surprised to see him legitimately competing for someone's starting position further into camp. Now this would be, further into the season. Now this would be an outside position because as talented as he could be at the star, and when you see someone who's listed at like 5'8", 5'9", you think they're going to play inside, but he's played on the outside, which again kind of shows you what the Rams think about him and his potential, because they have not played him inside at all, where you'd sometimes get those more undersized receiver mismatches, matchups. Instead, he's on the outside with the size receivers, which is significant to me. And he's been holding his own as well. And so I think that you're going to see him really start to compete as time passes for someone's starting spot. Now, how that will shake out, we'll just have to see. And honestly, I think that is one of the silver linings of a season like this, is you got a lot of young guys who are going to be really challenging each other through the course of this year, particularly on that defense, which, yes, we know will come with its own moments of what the hell, right? But at the same time, I think that you're conceptually going to start seeing really how just they're I see it every day. There's just this energy there. You know, they believe in themselves. Their coaches believe in them. They're being coached so hard, harder than I've seen a group get coached here, especially because a lot of those players were already veterans. And so you coach them a little differently than you coach young guys. And when you guys start to see those blocks get stacked together game over game, I'm very fortunate and I don't take for granted. Like, I get to see it happen day over day, right? What is going to be really fun for you guys is to see this start to happen game over game. And obviously that comes with the caveat that, you know, you have to factor in, you know, they hope no one gets injured. They hope that they can actually play with a lead, which means they can play the type of defense they want to play, because the defense always complements the offense in a Sean McVay system. And so you're hoping, if you're the Rams, for all of those things, so that you can actually see the proof that these guys are stacking it together. But yeah, I think, it's going to be that part of it, I think, will be fun for fans who are kind of nerds about the game, such as myself. And, okay, with that, I'm going to get to the queue. We've got some great questions in here. If I pause, I'm sorry. It's just because I'm reading, and trying to manage a screen, which, as you guys know, I'm not good at. But okay, We have, I'm really missing Rich and a good uniform theory from Todd G. Yes, I miss Rich too. I'm hopeful. I think he's going to be back with me after the Seattle game. For those of you guys who did not know, Rich is an editor on the Hockey Vertical now. And so he's going to be able to join me about once a month, it seems like, because we are trying to figure out schedules. We obviously are on very different schedules now. And I'm super grateful for any and all time that he has. And let's see. Who do you, Anonymous You says, who do you see getting rushing opportunities other than Akers? I think Kyren Williams is going to get touches. I think he's going to be utilized in the passing game. I think that he's going to get some carries. This is going to be situational based on the opponent. They have two really running backs who can do different things, and they are hoping, you probably won't see it all at once, but they're hoping that their run game is a lot more multiple and a lot more versatile than it has been in the past. Sean McVay sort of been known as that zone guy, right? And now you're going to see more gap. You're going to see more power. Those are things in which Cam Akers really excels. It's shoulders forward running, where you can see the field layout in front of you, and you can see, you know, the gaps in the spaces and those things opening up, versus, you know, everything being dependent on each individual offensive lineman moving things laterally and being in certain places at certain times. And so Cam can really, I thought, ran outside super well this camp. I thought he especially ran well when they were running some of that stuff, which I guess I can say now since it was in my story this week. Although if I do get a dart to the neck, you guys know why. and I just thought, you know, there and then Kyren Williams was really working in the passing game too. So they've got the versatility that, you know, it's rare with the draft picks that now they're getting running backs with, you know, it's going to be rare that you're going to get a full, complete, you know, lead workhorse guy. Those are sort of now outliers. You're seeing the league average. It's like a 40-40-20 or a 50-40-10 rep split at this point. That's across the league. It's also, there's a huge conversation about what that's done to tank contracts and value, despite the fact that running backs are, you know, the heart and soul, heartbeat of an offense in most cases. But, you know, because you're not going to necessarily, you're basically putting together a run game using multiple people versus it going through one person. And the Rams were super lucky when they had Todd Gurley because they could run their run game through one person and be the best in the league while they did it, but they can't do that anymore. So now it's going to be, I think you're going to see Cam Akers really, yeah, I know I've said this every year, but I really do think, and I believe in Cam, and I think that this could be a really good year for him, and he knows it, and he knows it also has to be, right? And I also think that Kyren Williams is going to do some nice things too, and I think they're both going to do some versatile things, which if all things unfold the way that they hope that it does, could be exciting for Rams fans to watch. Okay. Timmy O. I think Timmy is checking in from overseas as well. So thank you, Timmy, for showing up. Appreciate it. Actually have no idea what time it is where you are, but appreciate you. It says, hey Jordan, our run defense hasn't been the strongest. That's a very nice way to put it during the preseason. So what are your expectations for the game on Sunday? You think it'll be a rough start? You know, having Aaron Donald in the mix is going to change some things, obviously. So there's that. At the same time, some of the issues that the Rams were having sort of vacillated between technical issues from the young guys learning how to play gap and a half technique, which is a lot of, it's complicated, and is literally what it sounds like. You're accounting for a gap and a half. It takes different types of hands and leverage points and lateral movement and understanding space. And then also size, right? And I think, you know, Bobby Brown is their biggest guy on the interior. And I still am not sure just how many reps he's going to actually get because they'll be rotating a lot of players. And so I think that I am concerned about this. I've been concerned about this. I think if they could fiscally and if the finance matched the person, I think that they would have like legitimately shored this up. But you know, the person has to be available and they have to be available at the right price. And you just never know how some of this works. They also want to see some of the young guys play. I get that. But this is, yes, I do think this is a concern. Because what I saw above even the technical stuff, which can be fixed and will be, you know, these guys work hard at it and they're coached by Eric Henderson, who's one of the best, if not the best D-line coach in the country. You know, they're going to get the technical stuff cleaned up. You can't coach size though. And so you can fix some things with great technique if you don't have the size, but there's nothing like getting just shoved off the line of scrimmage. And that was where I was most concerned in the preseason, was some of those runs, and particularly that first game, some of those guys are going to be contributing. And you could see the pile just get moved. And that was not great. So that's what I'm looking for, is that physicality, but also that technique that sort of hides some of the lack of size that they may have coming together in that way. And then Aaron Donald will factor in for the positive as usual, but he shouldn't. But the thing is, you don't want him to have to do all of the heavy lifting himself. Guys need to sort of step up and figure it out along with him as well. I missed whatever was pun intentional, but I'm just like, I do puns without even realizing it at this point. So, Joshua S says, has she talked about the starting O-line for Sunday yet? Not sure who is starting. I think from left to right, it's going to be Alec Jackson, Steve Avila, Coleman Shelton, Joe Noteboom, and Rob Havenstein. Curtis F says, in your opinion, what happened with Bruss? It's a great question. I think that it was a confluence of poor process. And I'll explain each of these, but poor process and bad, unfortunate circumstance. Poor process, I think, you know, once they went all in on trying to re-sign Von Miller, they let Austin Corbett walk out the door. He could have been a really solid long-term option at right guard for them, but they didn't re-sign him. That pool of money and then some was going toward their efforts of re-signing Von Miller. Obviously, you guys remember they waited pretty long into that tampering period to actually figure out what was, you know, hear back from Von on what he was ultimately going to do. And what he did was go to the Bills, where they're, you know, they're poised to have potentially a really special season. I don't think you fault anybody, especially for that amount of money. And then also the potential of that team. You certainly don't fault people for that, but that sent the Rams sort of in, and I can say this now too, sort of in like impulsive panic mode a little bit. You know, they went looking for receivers and Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp thought Allen Robinson would be a good fit. And Sean McVay got on the phone with him and they signed Allen Robinson. And, you know, then they signed Bobby Wagner. And those are two additions in free agency that they don't often make moves for, those positions specifically. Neither of those players obviously are still on the roster. So these ripple effects start happening. So then you have this gaping hole at right guard. You also don't pick until number 103 that season. And then all of the free agents that maybe you could have brought in instead, everyone's pretty much gone because you're sort of focused on the Von Miller situation, right? And so then you're pigeonholed there. You have to draft for need at this point, which is not what you want to be doing, because that sort of narrows your options. It narrows your potential of being flexible at those points. And, you know, there's a different offensive line coach in place at that time. There was a little bit, they hadn't shifted over their philosophy with the run game yet. So you're looking at maybe perhaps a different pool of players than you would be this year. And so now you're looking at Logan Bruss and you draft him at 103. They were really excited about him because that was who the people who were making the decision, that was who people wanted. And then that's why you saw them be so excited, was because if you're drafting for need and you're being kind of told what direction you're in and all of that, like that's, you think you've nailed it, right? And so then after that, obviously so unfortunate for Logan, is blowing out his knee in that preseason game. But also even in the spring, he was limited in the spring. So people forget that he was limited in the spring coming out of college, and that he was learning a new position, right guard, because he was a right tackle most of the time in college. But then he can't really get reps there because he's limited. And then he gets hurt in the preseason. And then that's an entire year recovery where he has to like relearn how to walk and run and all that stuff. And then now you're going to be switched back to right tackle, right, at the NFL level. So you got to learn that. And so it's just but at the same time, it doesn't excuse a poor process, right? So it's just both of those things. I'm going to repeat it again. I'm sorry. Like, we love to say it here. Multiple things are true. Because that's just how a lot of these situations unfold. So, Tommy T, that's a good one. We could totally hear Jordan holding her laugh for Abtac. Always be talking about kickers. Day one, 11 personnel people entering year four of me being so grateful to be on this podcast and on this beat for you guys and for The Athletic. Know that was maybe one of our first, my era of 11 personnel, that was maybe one of our first big inside jokes. So thank you very much. Let's see. Alfred D says, hi, Jordan. Any thoughts on Yeast over John Johnson III? Is there going to be more of a 50-50 split? I don't think you want to rotate your safeties a lot. Russ Yeast can, and I can say that now, guys. Did you hear that? Russ Yeast. He could play the star. So that's interesting to see what they do with rotations in that regard. They could move him from that depth safety to closer to the line of scrimmage at times, those types of things. And John Johnson would probably come in at that point. But if Jordan Fuller starts, I have a hard time seeing them start John Johnson with him because they're very similar types of safeties. They're similar builds. Similar velocities, those types of things. So I think it kind of just depends on who they decide to start. I do think Russ Yeast will start. Don't lock me in on that because things could change, but he and Jordan Fuller started the majority of camp and into the preseason practices together. So I think that's probably something that you're looking at in this regard. And Curtis F., great pun. Greg I says, Jordan, thank you. We can end on this because it's a very nice comment. Jordan, thank you for doing this. Will you be posting a recorded version of this later? Guys, yes, I will. Super producer Danielle, who was kind enough to share the link out because I am hopeless and kind of a moron when it comes to my phone. she's going to be cutting this together and posting it on our regular podcast feed. And we're going to be doing more of these throughout the year. So you guys, I just want to thank you for your participation and positivity. I know that this is going to be a frustrating year at times for fans, and we're kind of in it together. I'm going to do my best to bring all the information I can to you. And I think that in the end, I think we can all just be excited that football is back and that this team, I think, in some ways could legitimately surprise people. The energy is really good. If they are going to be bad, they don't know that. So that's what I will leave you guys with. I really appreciate all of you. I hope you guys are all staying caffeinated. Hope you guys are all staying hydrated. I hope you're taking care of each other and yourselves. Please take care of each other out there, and catch you next time.